She is war-gifted. She will be useful. Wolf Spring. Jules wakes slowly in the warm bed, beneath the pleasant weight of Joseph's arm across her chest. His eyes open when he feels her begin to stir, and he kisses her shoulder. "Hello, my Jules," he says, and her cheeks go hot. Joseph laughs. "Now you decide to blush? After all this?"
"It's new to me," she whispers.
"And to me."
"You know what I mean."
"I do," he says, and moves atop her again to kiss her. "But it's true. The first time with you was always going to be special, no matter how many ways I imagined it."
"Joseph?"
She giggles and squirms away toward the window.
Sealhead Cove is full of floating, lit lanterns.
"Joseph," Jules says and grips the sill. They had fallen asleep and slept too long. The Queen's Hunt. Arsinoe stumbles farther and farther into the woods.
"Where do we go, Braddock?"
She is already breathless from kicking through the heavy summer undergrowth. She looks around. The bent-over tree? Perhaps it would grant her luck. But it is not far enough, and besides, it has no loyalty, no reason to favor her above either of her sisters.
"There's a thicket," she pants. "Where the deer go?"
Jules has taken her there. She turns right and left and momentarily panics, thinking she has somehow managed to get herself lost in her own trees. A while ago, the hunting horn blew from Wolf Spring, the townsfolk's way of telling her that at least one of her sisters has entered the woods. It is all the help she can hope for, and it seems an age has passed since the horn sounded. Somewhere in the distance, leaves rustle and twigs crack underfoot. The sounds are far away, but not quiet, chasing sounds rather than stalking. Arsinoe crouches and backs up, behind a large trunk. She motions for Braddock, and he comes to sniff her hands and see what she has.
"Stupid bear! You have to run, don't you see? They'll kill you if you don't!"
He blinks at her with calm, bear eyes. As a great brown, he has not had to fear much, and though he can sense the fear in her, without the familiar bond, she cannot make him understand.
If only Jules would come. She must know by now what has happened.
Unless they got to her. That thought settles like ice in Arsinoe's stomach. If anyone has hurt Jules, Arsinoe will find a way to tear them to pieces.
"We can't rest long, boy,"
she says, and pats Braddock's broad head.
"We have to keep moving."
"Up that tree," Bree says and points. The tree is tall with many sprawling, climbable branches, and it is heavy with leaves. They mean to put Mirabella up it, so she might see her sisters coming and burn them up with fire or bolts of lightning as they approach. "They may never pass by this way," Mirabella objects.
"Give me your cloak."
Elizabeth holds her hand out, and Mirabella takes it off so that Bree can help Elizabeth into it.
"I will run decoy. I will find them and bring them right beneath you."
"No, that is too dangerous. You cannot outrun a bear or dodge a poisoned arrow. We should stay together." "How long do you want to stay up in that tree?" Elizabeth asks. "This hunt will end only when one queen is dead." She squares her shoulders.
"Don't worry about me, Mira. I may have only one hand, but my legs have never been stronger."
"Take Bree with you, at least." Her friends look at each other reluctantly, but they know they will never get her to agree otherwise. "All right, then," Mirabella says. She turns and looks up. "I will need some help. On to the first branches." Katarine and her riders are the last into the woods, but that does not bother her. She always intended to be the hunter, chasing her prey. "The other queens have a strong lead," Margaret Boleyn says, scanning the trees.
"We should have brought hounds," says Bertrand Roman.
Katarine laughs. That would not have been very sporting. Let her sisters run. They cannot run forever, and they cannot have gotten far on foot. She turns half-moon in a prancing circle. He is as eager to be off as she is.
Is it a waste of words to ask you to keep to the middle? Peter asks, and Nicholas grins.
Of course it is, Catherine replies.
A great brown bear can disembowel a running horse. Think of Half Moon, if you will not think of yourself.
Catherine strokes the black gelding's frothy neck. That bear will not touch us. And if you see it, try to take it alive. She puts her heels to Half Moon's sides and takes off down the path, not waiting to hear them argue. They act like taking the bear alive is an impossible task. But she had their weapons tipped specially with sleeping draft. A few cuts and arrows, and the beast should fall serenely to the ground. But it will not be that easy for you, sister, Catherine whispers, and leans forward excitedly in the saddle.
Wolf Spring.
Jules and Joseph hurry past the docks toward the market with Camden running ahead, jumping onto crates and piles of rope, frustrated that they cannot leap and bound like she can. It's practically dark, Jules moans. The feast will have started.
Arsinoe will understand.
Joseph falls behind, trying to button his shirt. Jules did not give him much time to dress before leaving the house.
And she's safe. Everyone is with her, Madrigal and Ellis.
Madrigal? What good is she? None on a good day, and now less than that when she's doubled over with baby sickness.
That baby is your little sister or brother.
Jules looks back at him grudgingly. But Arsinoe is who matters now. Jules can just imagine how she will scowl when they slide in beside her at the feasting table. What took you so long? She will say. I didn't have anyone to plug my ears during the council speeches. They walk quickly through the market, past the empty stalls and through the alley that leads to the square. Except the sliver of the square that Jules can see is empty. There is no one at the tables and no laughter carrying down the streets. She looks back out to the harbor. Maybe she was mistaken, and the lantern she saw from Joseph's window were an illusion. Or a dream. But there they are, burning, bobbing on the water. The ceremony is over.
Where is everyone? Joseph asks.
Camden whines and swings her dark-tipped tail back and forth. Something is wrong. We'll try the docks and the shore, Jules suggests. She can think of nowhere else to go.
Joanne! Joseph!
Luke comes running with Hank fluttering and clucking on his heels.
Where have you been?
We fell asleep, Jules replies honestly, too distracted to feel shy. What's happened? Where is everyone?
They're in the orchard, Luke spits, waiting on the edges of the forest. The poisoners and the queen, Queen Catherine, she challenged them to a hunt.
A hunt? Joseph repeats and his brow furrows.
Luke. Where is Arsinoe? I don't know. She went into the woods first with Braddock. Both of them are after her now, especially that poisoner. She kept staring at Queen Arsinoe the whole time.
Where? Jules demands. And when Luke starts to sputter, she reaches out and shakes him.
Where? The southern edge, near the creek. But she could have gone anywhere. Where were you, Jules? Why weren't you here?
Jules does not answer. She runs for the forest, not near the orchard where the crowd would see her, but up the hill and off the road to follow the stream. Camden sprints ahead, her pink nose twitching and scenting the air. In her panic and haste, Arsinoe may have gone anywhere. But she will not have left Braddock behind, and the scent of the bear will be easy for Camden to pick up.
Jules, wait!
Joseph calls out. He is right on her heels, but even his long stride is no match for her short one when her blood is up. Wait for what? She snaps, frustrated. She pauses for one step and turns. I know that we can't interfere, but I can't let her be hunted out there alone, Joseph. Can you?
No.
He grabs her arm and they start to run again.
We have to find her.
The Queen's Hunt. The poisoners see Braddock first. His enormous shaggy form is impossible to hide. Arsinoe hears the cries and then the hoofbeats. She looks at her bear. Run! But a great brown's instinct is not to run. It is to fight. He turns toward their pursuers, still far off in the trees. He sniffs the air curiously and stands up on his hind legs. No, Arsinoe pleads. She pats his side desperately and motions with her hands toward where they must go, deeper into the trees, into the dense growth where the horses will not have speed. Please, Braddock, please come. They'll kill you. They cannot kill him? The big, sweet bear? The poisoners will remember the havoc he wreaked the night of the quickening. They will not take any chances. They will not give Arsinoe any time to tell them that he is not mean-tempered, that it was all her fault. Come on, Braddock, come on! Her feet move in place, and her eyes dart between him and the approaching riders. Catherine is in the lead, her crossbow raised. Please, Arsinoe hisses, and then cries out with relief when he drops to all fours and follows her into the underbrush. Mirabella stiffens at the sound of running horses. They are close, but she is safe enough, high in her tree. She presses against the trunk and braces her legs, her feet stuck firmly into the V of a branch. Bree and Elizabeth left to run decoy only a short time ago. She lost track of them almost immediately. Will she see them run past, with Catherine on their heels? Or a bear? She clenches and unclenches her fists. Her lightning is stronger than her fire, but the fire is faster and more accurate. The shouting and hoofbeats grow louder, and she twists to see whether she can spot movement. The noises are violent, crashing, but Elizabeth and Bree set off in the opposite direction. They should be safe, unless they have circled back. It is terrible, waiting there, listening to her sisters hunting each other, wondering what is happening, not knowing what to hope for. The clever thing to do would be to remain right where she is, to wait for it to be over, and for Bree and Elizabeth to return. Mirabella climbs down from her tree and drops to the ground. Her sister and her bear have heard them coming and darted into the foliage like frightened rabbits, but it will not save them. The distance covered by Half Moon's legs is much greater than the distance covered by Arsinoe's. If Arsinoe were smart, she would ride the bear. Or perhaps there are limits to even what a familiar will allow.
Don't lose them, Nicholas calls, exhilarated, his eyes bright.
Even Peter has gotten into the spirit of things and rides as focused as a diving hawk. The bear comes into view, and Catherine holds her crossbow at the ready. But she is not after it. The others, with their weapons edged with sleeping draft, may have their fun with him. She wants only Arsinoe. It was always going to be Arsinoe she hunted, the one from Wolf Spring, the one who would die here, in front of her own city. It seems only fitting. Half Moon thunders through the ferns and shrubs, and the bear grows larger ahead, dwarfing the black-dressed queen running by its side. Catherine should have painted poison onto Half Moon's shoes so she could simply ride Arsinoe into the ground. Oh well, perhaps she will save that for Mirabella. She smiles until the bear turns to fight.
No, Braddock, no! Arsinoe shouts and stomps her feet, but he will not obey. He is tired of running. The hoofbeats and unfamiliar voices coming closer and closer make him angry. He stands on his hind legs and roars so they will go away. He will not swat them unless he has to. Arsinoe does not know what to do. They cannot stop,
but he will not come.
She shakes her head and turns to run on alone, but stops after only a few strides. He is her bear. She cannot leave him.
Go! Mirabella shouts.
Arsinoe freezes. She searches the trees and sees Mirabella ducked behind a fat trunk, her hood pulled over her hair.
Go, Mirabella orders again, eyes wild. Go now! Run, Arsinoe! You must run!
I can't, she cries as Braddock drops to his feet and charges the horses. She can only stand and watch as the knives and arrows fly. She can only listen to him bellow as they sink deep into his soft brown coat. She looks at Mirabella through blurry eyes.
You run, Arsinoe says. Save yourself. They have already caught me.
She turns and cups her hands to yell.
Come and get me, you poisoner cowards, if you're brave enough to go where your horses can't follow.
She does not wait to see if they will take the bait. She knows that they will, and she knows where she is. It is not far to the deer thicket, where she can drop to the ground and hide. If she is lucky, Catarine will pass by unaware, perhaps even close enough that Arsinoe can grab her and slit her throat.
Stay here, Catarine orders.
She bares her teeth and urges Half Moon past the stumbling, wounded bear into the bushes after Arsinoe. When Half Moon breaks through the undergrowth, they are well within range, and Catarine takes aim.
Where do you think you are running to? She whispers, and then fires her shot.
The bolt catches Arsinoe squarely in the back. She falls with a small gasp, a sound Catarine will relish for many nights afterward. Catarine shouts her victory, then whirls Half Moon around in a circle. She could have sworn that she heard another scream come from somewhere in the trees.
Bree claps her hands over Mirabella's mouth, stopping her screams. Mirabella jerks and struggles, but Elizabeth is there as well, and together they wrestle her to the ground.
Arsinoe fell. Catarine shot her in the back and she fell.
It is over. Hot tears slide down Mirabella's cheeks as she watches Catarine dismount. From where they lie hidden in the ferns, Arsinoe's body is nothing but a limp pile of black clothes. Catarine kicks Arsinoe in the ribs, turning her over, and Arsinoe yelps like a dog.
What will kill you first? Catarine wonders. My poison or my crossbow bolt?
She cocks her head.
No last words, no last retort.
She bends to listen. Then she laughs.
Let me go, Mirabella whispers furiously.
No, Mira, Bree whispers back. Please, it is over. The bolt was poisoned.
Let it be over.
No,
Mirabella says. But Bree is right. Whatever she could have done for Arsinoe, she did not do it in time. Catarine twirls Arsinoe's red-streaked mask around her finger.
What a monster that bear made of you, Catarine says, studying Arsinoe's exposed, scarred face. You should be glad that we killed it.
Arsinoe coughs. Her breathing is ragged and wet.
And what a monster they have made of you, little Catarine. Scars or no scars?
What happens next happens so quickly that Mirabella almost does not see. Joanne Malone bursts out from the trees behind Catarine.
Get away from her,
she screams, and Catarine flies backward and lands with a grunt. Jules's hand is out as though to push, but she was too far away to have touched her. Mirabella watches, unblinking, as Jules races to Arsinoe's side. And when Catarine regains her footing, Jules does it again, knocking Catarine back through the air with an unseen force to roll where she lands.
Arsinoe, put your arm around my neck. Help me, Arsinoe, hurry!
Jules calls Catarine's horse,
and makes it kneel and heaves herself and Arsinoe into the saddle. They gallop away, with Zhewian's mountain cat loping behind on three legs, and all Catarine can do is scream and pound her fists against the ground. Mirabella, Elizabeth, and Bree duck low, as Catarine's hunting party catches up to her.
Queen Catarine, are you hurt?
No. Catarine stands up and brushes dirt and grass from her skirt. I got her. I got Arsinoe. But that naturalist stole the body. She stalks forward and jumps nimbly into the saddle behind a boy with ice-blonde hair. One of the errands. Ride, Peter. I will not lose my sister's corpse. She kicks the horse and it takes off, and the rest of the poisoners follow. What was that? Bree asks after the hoofbeats fade. Though I have never seen it, I would swear that was the war gift. But how? Elizabeth asks. Jules Malone is a naturalist. I do not know. Mirabella begins to sob. And I do not care. She leans against her friends and they wrap her in their arms. They are safe. She is safe. She should be grateful, but she cannot be when Arsinoe is dead. Wolf Spring. Joseph lost track of Jules and Camden almost the moment that the mountain cat caught Braddock's scent. They were far too fast for him, and though he tried to catch up, there was no chance. So he backtracked through the forest toward the orchard, where at least he will not have to worry alone. He exits the wood and joins the silent, gathered crowd, slipping through people until he finds Billy, beside the Malones and Matthew.
Someone comes!
Is it Arsinoe? Billy asks, neck stretched.
It's so soon,
Kate says quietly.
Too soon.
And she is right. The queen who emerges from the trees is not Arsinoe, but Mirabella.
Mira, Billy says. Is she all right? Is Catarine dead?
Joseph looks into Mirabella's eyes and goes cold all over. I am sorry, Mirabella says. But Queen Catarine shot her in the back. The gathered people barely react. No raucous celebration by the poisoners. No relief from the elementals. They will save their prayers and toasts for later, when they are alone. As for the naturalists, they are an iron lot to begin with, and have braced themselves for this news since Arsinoe was born.
No. No!
Billy elbows his way toward Mirabella, who is being held up by Bree Westwood and one of the priestesses. She looks at Billy regretfully. She cannot even meet Joseph's eyes.
Mira, you're lying! Billy shouts. I don't believe it! I won't believe it until I see her!
Matthew reaches for Billy's arm, but he twists loose. Joseph takes him by the shoulders and Billy grabs him back, shaking so hard that they almost fall.
What's the matter with them? Why aren't they doing anything?
He turns to the Malones and screams into their grim, silent faces.
What's wrong with you? Go in there and find her!
Easy, Billy, Joseph says into his ear. It might not be true.
It can't be. Jules and Camden had her scent.
Joseph's heart thuds at his own words. If Jules and Camden were killed, he will lose his mind.
I'm going in there, Billy says and pulls free.
Billy, Mirabella holds up her hands. You will not find her. She is gone.
She's not gone.
No, I mean that her... Her eyes shift to Joseph. Jules tried to save her. And afterward, she took Arsinoe away. Joseph's eyes fill. Madrigal grasps her stomach and falls to her knees.
I am sorry, Mirabella mouths.
I know, Joseph whispers. I know.
The crowd straightens at the sounds of hoofbeats and rustling leaves. The Aarons step to the fore with their ever-loyal Black Council. So far, they have wisely kept to the edges, but their queen is returning, and a queen returning in victory is to be honored,
regardless of where that victory took place. Margaret Boleyn rides out of the trees first. She slows her horse and trots directly to Natalia Aaron, so close that Natalia must move her head to the side to avoid the horse's tired blowing. It is done.
They could still be wrong, Billy says,
and Joseph keeps an arm across his foster brother's chest as Natalia questions every rider, even the gold-haired suitor. And then Queen Catherine emerges, riding tandem behind the Aaron boy.
She took my horse, Catherine fumes. She stole Half Moon.
Who?
Kate Malone demands.
Arsinoe?
Catherine looks positively furious. But when she sees who is asking, her face calms and she lowers her eyes respectfully.
Queen Arsinoe, my sister, is dead, Mistress Malone. I shot her with a poisoned bolt from my crossbow. The she, who I speak of, is your granddaughter, Jeuien. She stole my horse and fled with the body.
If that is so, Kate says, her voice strained, then she acted out of grief and will soon return to her senses.
I am sure you are right, Kate, says Natalia.
But the queen's body must be returned. Queen Arsinoe is deserving of her burial rites. Joseph's eyes narrow as Catherine covers her face, perhaps to hide a sneer. When she lowers her hands, her face is solemn.
But there is more, she says. When the Malone girl attacked me, it was not with her familiar. It was with the war gift.
Silence. Then shouts of disbelief. Catherine's voice rises above the noise.
Think what you will, Wolf Spring, but I have seen it. Jeuien Malone is legion cursed.
The Northeast Woods. Jules slows the horse when they come to the banks of the River Calder. The night air is chilled, and the water rushes by black in the moonlight. Arsinoe lies across the pommel of her saddle. Dead? Jules refuses to think so, but is too afraid to check. She calls Camden and holds the horse steady as the cat jumps onto its hindquarters to ford the river.
I'll say one thing for the poisoners, Jules says. They breed fine horses.
This fellow is faster than any of the saddle horses in Wolf Spring by half, and stronger. He has carried Camden's considerable weight for at least a third of the distance, and Jules has not even used her gift to press him.
Arsinoe, can you hear me?
There is no response. Jules grits her teeth as the horse hops the last few steps onto the opposite bank, jostling Arsinoe in the saddle. Arsinoe has not spoken since they fled from Catherine. She has not even moaned. But Jules will keep going. She will keep running as long as she feels warmth in Arsinoe's body.
Please, Arsinoe, don't be dead.
The bolt sticks out from Arsinoe's back and presses against Jules's leg whenever the horse moves. Something has to be done about it. Every time it shifts, it does more damage. She lifts Arsinoe's shoulder gently to look.
Don't touch it,
Arsinoe gasps, and Jules is so startled she almost screams.
Don't touch the bolt. You don't know what she used on it.
Jules leans down and covers Arsinoe's head with kisses.
She is alive.
She is even feisty.
So I'll wrap my hand first, Jules says,
grinning over tears of relief.
It has to come out.
No, Arsinoe grimaces, her teeth white in the moonlight.
Just let it stay.
Jules slides her arm around Arsinoe's neck. She is no healer, and no one will help an injured queen now that the ascension has started. She can only think of one place and one person. But the journey seems so far.
It's all right, Jules,
Arsinoe whispers. She looks down at Arsinoe's pale face. She is weak, but the bleeding has slowed. Camden slides off the back of the horse, and they pick up their pace again, heading ever farther north. Wolf Spring Temple.
Mira, take some warm cider.
Elizabeth puts a cup into her hands, but Mirabella barely looks at it.
Even at midsummer, the nights grow so cool here beside the sea.
Is that from one of the barrels? She cannot have that, you little fool!
One of the Roland priestesses grabs the cup so roughly that cider sloshes over the edge.
That has not been inspected.
Do not call her a little fool, Bree says, seething. And if the queen cannot have that cider, then go and warm her some that she can have.
The priestess scowls, but she leaves to do as she is told. After she turns her back, Bree mimes a kicking motion into her backside. She turns to Elizabeth.
You should leave this order if they treat you this way.
I'm an initiate, Bree. We exist to be kicked around.
You are one of the queen's best friends.
The goddess doesn't give preferential treatment. Neither do her priestesses.
Bree blows a stray lock of hair away from her face and mutters under her breath. Mirabella thinks she catches the word malarkey. Elizabeth and Bree have not left her side since the queen's hunt. They steady her as the rest of their party flutters about like worried birds, confused and ineffectual, running into one another. Luca is at the Malone house with the members of the Black Council, discussing punishments for Jules. She assaulted one queen and absconded with the body of another. But her most grievous offense lies with what she is. Legion cursed. Mirabella closes her eyes.
Poor Jules. Poor Joseph.
There should be no punishment. There should be commendation. Honor.
She did what Mirabella was too afraid to do.
Mirabella could have tossed Catherine just as easily with a gust of wind. She could have felled her and her horse together with a bolt of lightning. The door of the temple opens and the high priestess walks inside. Sarah steps up to greet her and takes her by the hands.
Luca, she says, have they found Queen Arsinoe's body?
No, and they are not likely to. Luca replies. The Malone girl knows these forests, and now that night has fallen, there is little chance of picking up her trail before morning. By then, she will be too far ahead of us.
What is the punishment? Mirabella calls out,
and the room quiets. It is obvious from her tone that she does not think there should be one.
There is no punishment for taking the body, Mira, Luca says gently. The council is satisfied well enough with a dead queen, and they do not wish to anger the people of Wolf Spring by executing one of their favorite daughters.
She raises her eyebrows and cocks her head.
I was frankly impressed. Surprised, but impressed. However, there is still the question of the Legion curse. When Jewienne Malone returns, she will need to go to the capital for questioning.
Favorite daughters, a Roland priestess scoffs.
Wolf Spring will turn her out on her ear, now that they know she is legion-cursed. They may execute her themselves.
Murmurs of agreement ripple through the room. The priestesses from Roland and Wolf Spring glare, one side daring the other to say any different.
Luca, you know that is a lie, Mirabella says.
They will not question her. They will lock her up and put her to death as soon as the crown is decided.
That may be, says Luca. Goddess knows it is dangerous for one so strong to bear the curse. If she were to go mad. But it is their decision.
She looks at Mirabella calmly.
Unless you are queen, then it would be up to your council.
Mirabella could save Jules.
Of course, she must save her for Arsinoe's sake. The door opens again and Ro stalks inside.
Some of the Aaron party went back into the woods with a large litter and a wagon, she says.
Ropes, lanterns.
For what? Mirabella asks.
A victory rug, I am thinking. They were after the body of Arsinoe's bear.
How terrible. Elizabeth shrinks at the thought. To defile a familiar that way? A queen's familiar?
Catherine is wicked,
Mirabella whispers. I am so sorry, Arsinoe, that I did not take care of her a long time ago.
The Sea-Watch Mountains. The horse has finally begun to drag his hooves. Jules pats his froth-covered neck.
Good, brave boy, she says.
She pushed him hard, only easing the pace when they came to the rocky pass in the foothills of the mountains. In her arms, Arsinoe begins to cough. Her whole body convulses and stiffens like a plank, threatening to tip all the way off the saddle.
Arsinoe, be still!
Jules stops the horse and dismounts, her legs aching so badly that they barely work. She curses the poisoners under her breath, but truthfully, the pain might be just from so many hours in the saddle.
Camden, help me!
She eases Arsinoe down, and Camden slides underneath her, helping to soften the landing. She purrs and licks worriedly at the queen's clammy cheek. Arsinoe shouts when the crossbow bolt sticking out of her back bends against the earth, and Jules quickly rolls her onto her side. In the pale light of the moon and stars, Arsinoe looks dead already.
I hear a stream nearby, Jules says with forced cheer. Though weak as I am now, I couldn't convince a fish to splash me in the face, let alone convince one to let us eat it.
No fish, Arsinoe murmurs. Water.
Jules leads the horse toward the sound of the stream, and she and Camden bend with him to drink. In the horse's saddlebags, she finds a silver flask and dumps out whatever poison Catarine had stored inside, tipping it into the rushing current to dissipate. She rinses it 3 times and fills it with cold, clear water.
Here.
Jules kneels and tugs Arsinoe's head into her lap, pressing the flask to her lips.
Arsinoe can only manage a mouthful before she starts to cough again, and when she is through, dark blood is dotted across her chin.
You shouldn't have done this, Jules. You'll get into trouble.
Since when have we cared about trouble? Jules studies Arsinoe's scarred face fondly and traces the lines of the cuts with her thumb.
She took my mask.
I'll get it back. Jules promises. I'll get it back, and her head besides.
No!
Arsinoe starts to cough again. More blood coats her chin.
Not your job. Let Mirabella...
You shouldn't have had to try to run, Jules says. You shouldn't have been on your own. I'm so sorry. I am never there when you need me.
You're always there.
Not today. I was with Joseph and we fell asleep. I was supposed to be with you and I was with him, asleep. Arsinoe grins.
Finally.
Jules wipes her face. He is not more important than you. He's faithless, untrustworthy, not worth this.
Well, who is?
Arsinoe quips.
But he is better than you think.
It was my fault, Jules. What happened between him and Mirabella? What are you talking about?
I did a spell.
It went wrong. It was early on before I knew what low magic could do.
But I never wanted it to hurt you.
She coughs again, her fingers hooked like claws. When she quiets, a sheen of sweat coats her forehead.
I can't breathe, she says. Jules! I can't breathe.
Her eyes slip shut. Arsinoe? Jules leans over her and shakes her gently.
Arsinoe, no!
Panicked, she looks into the trees for someone, anyone to shout to. Camden pads close. She nuzzles Arsinoe's face and the queen's head falls loosely away.
Let's go.
Camden, let's go! Jules heaves Arsinoe's body up and calls for the horse to kneel. They are so tired, but Arsinoe is dying, so they have to ride. The Inn of the Crooked Tail Cat.
The poisoners only make it as far as Highgate before they stop to celebrate. Under the direction of Genevieve and Cousin Lucian from the council, they take over the entirety of the first inn that they find, the Inn of the Crooked-Tailed Cat. Despite its dubious name, the inn is clean and well-kept, the kitchen stocked with enough fine pots and knives to prepare an impromptu poisoner's feast. All afternoon and into the evening, Queen Catherine's party toasts her and listens to the story of the hunt told over and over again. They even drag the bear inside, tied down in the back of a wagon, poisoned and unconscious.
"What will happen to him now?" Nicholas asks, looking at the bear. "What happens to a familiar after its naturalist is dead?"
Catherine leans back in her chair and studies the great brown with a cocked head. It is still large and intimidating, even strapped into a wagon with its tongue out between its teeth. There is something so satisfying about seeing it at her mercy, its shining brown coat cut through and bleeding from blades and arrows coated with her poisons. "It would go back to the woods, I suppose."
"But in Wolf Spring, I learned that familiars are granted unnatural long life," Nicholas goes on. "Will it still, or without the link to its naturalist, will it age and die as any other bear?"
Peter, seated beside Catherine, finishes his cup of May wine and slams it down on the table.
"These are questions best posed to a naturalist," he says. "Perhaps you would like to go back and ask them. Then they could take you on to Roland. You should be beginning your suit of Queen Mirabella soon, yes?"
Nicholas smiles and shrugs.
"Soon," he says, "unless my queen will kill her first."
He dips his head and kisses Catherine's gloved hand, then gets up from the table. He approaches the bear, and Catherine watches as he dumps his cup of wine over its head.
"You cannot really like him," Peter snaps.
"Why not? There is plenty about him to like. I have never seen his eyes on anyone but me, for example. And I have not found daisies in his hair, put there by lusty priestesses."
"I have not had another girl since you, Cat," Peter says quietly. "You have ruined me for them."
His eyes turn back to Nicholas, who is laughing and clinking cups with giftless Renata Hargrove from the council.
"He does not love you like I do. He cannot."
"And how do you know, Peter?" Catherine asks, leaning so close that he must feel her breath against his ear.
"What must he do to prove that he does? Must he throw me down into the Breccia domain?"
Peter stiffens, and Catherine sits back and happily tosses a handful of poison berries into her mouth.
"You eat too much. You will be sick tonight."
"Sick, perhaps," she says, and eats another handful. "But I will not die. I have been poisoned and poisoned again since I was a child, Peter. I know what I am doing. You must relax and try to enjoy yourself." He settles into his chair and crosses his arms, the only dismal spot in the room. The music from the country musicians is not refined, and the inn is plain and without a single chandelier. But the poisoners, so elated by the victory in Wolf Spring, do not seem to mind. Even Natalia dances, her back straight, smiling softly in the arms of her younger brother Antonin.
"Play louder," Genevieve orders, "so if the elementals' coaches pass by, they will hear it."
Everyone raises a cheer, and the musicians play harder. Catherine wishes that Mirabella could hear all this, see all this. But though coaches from Roland may pass by carrying priestesses, Mirabella will not be with them. The elemental queen and her Westwoods traveled to Wolf Spring by sea, where they can control the currents and shifting winds and, of course, where they were sure not to run into any poisoners. Margaret Boleyn approaches the table and bows. Then she leans against it, so drunk that her left eye has begun to wander in its socket.
An inspired move, bringing the bear inside, she says. The only thing better would be if it were Arsinoe's body lying strapped in the wagon.
Katarine's eyes narrow.
A vanquished queen is deserving of her burial rites, Margaret, she growls in a different voice. She is worthy of the people's love and affection.
Candles have burned in the windows of every town they pass through, in honor of Queen Arsinoe. And that is the way it should be.
Margaret waves her hand, oblivious to Katarine's grave tone. Let them mourn and be done with it. Her name will not be spoken after your crowning. It will be lost in time, like a pebble in a river.
Katarine's gloved fingers grip the wood of her chair so tightly that it squeaks.
Katarine? Peter asks. Are you all right?
Katarine snatches up her cup of tainted wine. She wants to throw it into Margaret Boleyn's face, leap upon her, and pour it down her war-gifted throat.
Perhaps some day. But not now.
She stands, and the musicians stop playing. The poisoners stop dancing mid-step.
A toast! To my sister, Queen Arsinoe!
Jaws drop slightly. They titter, as if expecting a joke. But Katarine is not joking. And eventually Natalia walks to her wine cup and holds it aloft. After a moment, the others follow suit.
It would be easy to hate her, Katarine says, thinking of her sister, her eyes losing focus on the crowd. Another queen standing in the way. But Queen Arsinoe was an innocent in this, just as much an innocent as I. Before that bear, she gestures toward it, before Beltane, the people felt about her what they felt about me, that we were weak, born to die, sacrifices to the chosen queen's legend. So let us not forget the queen we truly hate, the darling of Rowlandt and the temple.
Katarine holds her cup high.
So I toast to Queen Arsinoe, my sister, whom I killed with mercy. It will not be so when I kill Queen Mirabella. Queen Mirabella will suffer.
The Black Cottage. By the time Jules reaches the Black Cottage, she is too exhausted to be cautious. She pushes the spent horse the last strides through the trees. In the stream, he nearly stumbles and falls. She has to jerk up hard on his poor head to keep him on his feet.
Kara?
She trots across the dirt path, through the edging of waxed leaf shrubs. Her voice is strained and odd-sounding. It seems like forever since she heard any voice at all. For hours it has been nothing but hoofbeats and rustling trees.
Kara!
The front door of the cottage opens, and her Aunt Kara steps cautiously outside.
Joanne?
Yes,
Jules says. Her shoulders sag. They ache beneath Arsinoe's weight.
It's me.
Kara does not speak, but her chocolate hound bounds through the door and down the stone steps to jump at the horse and bay happily.
Aunt Kara, help us!
The words come out thin as air as she slides sideways out of the saddle, dragging Arsinoe's body with her. But she does not hit the ground. Kara's arms are there to catch her.
Jules?
Kara says. She cups Jules's face between her hands and then feels all up and down her bones. Beside them, her hound sniffs excitedly all over Camden, collapsed in the grass. Finally, Kara pushes Arsinoe's short black hair away from her face. Her lips tremble when she sees the scars.
I didn't know where else to go,
Jules whispers. Footsteps shuffle through the cottage door onto the porch, and Jules looks up at an old woman, dressed all in black and stout as a small ox. Stark white hair falls over her right shoulder in a long braid.
Kara, she says. They cannot stay here.
Who is she? Jules asks.
I thought you were alone. I thought your banishment, your punishment, was to be alone here until the new queens come.
That's Willa, Kara explains. The old midwife. Someone had to teach me.
She looks toward the old woman.
I won't turn my niece away.
It is not her I care about.
Willa nods toward Arsinoe.
That is a dead queen, and no queen may return here once she has grown. Not unless she is carrying her triplets.
She's not dead, Jules shouts, and you will help her. Willa snorts.
Such orders, she grumbles as she walks down the steps. I see the resemblance now between you and your aunt.
Turn her, Jules, Kara says. Let me see.
Be careful, don't touch it. It's a poisoned bolt.
Kara's hand stops in midair. A poisoned bolt? Jules, there's nothing to be done about that.
No, you...
Jules hesitates.
But what does it matter if Kara knows their secret? Everyone on the island thinks Arsinoe is dead. That she is really a poisoner makes no difference now.
Jules opens her mouth to speak, but stops when she sees Willa's unsurprised expression.
You knew, says Jules. You knew all along.
Willa reaches down and grasps one of Arsinoe's arms.
Get her inside, she says gruffly. She is barely alive, but we will see what can be done. I am a poisoner as well. I can handle the bolt.
Jules jerks awake in an unfamiliar bed. It is full dark out, and she reaches across the blankets to Camden so the big cat can soothe her with a purr. Then she remembers. They are at the Black Cottage, with Arsinoe and Kara. Removing the poisoned bolt, cleaning and sewing the wound closed, went easier than Jules had expected, mostly because Arsinoe never regained consciousness. Willa's sure hands twisted and pulled, rubbed and tugged, until the queen lay beneath a soft blanket, looking as calm and serene as if it were no more than a well-earned nap. Afterward, Kara helped Jules down the hall to another room, where she and Camden were asleep as soon as they closed their eyes. Jules slides out of bed, still in her clothes and shoes, and Camden stretches and jumps to the floor. There are lights, casting shadows in the hall. Kara or Willa must still be up, somewhere. Jules slips softly to the room where they put Arsinoe and peeks inside. The queen's breathing is shallow but visible in the steady light of the candle on the bedside table. Jules watches for a few moments, but Arsinoe will not wake tonight. So she tiptoes farther toward the other source of light, hoping to find her aunt. The Black Cottage is no small place. It is larger than the Malone House, and full of fine things. Silver candelabras, glorious oil paintings, and rugs so plush that she cannot resist wriggling her toes in them. She pauses briefly to peer up a long, dark staircase, and then follows the light and sounds through the sitting room to the kitchen. The chocolate hound hears them coming and trots out. She dances a happy, sniffing circle around Camden, before leaning her long body against Jules. You're awake, Kara says, when Jules enters the kitchen, which is brightly lit by several yellow lamps. How is Arsinoe? Jules sits down at the table opposite her. Still resting? Still breathing? From the look of you when you arrived, you should still be sleeping as well. That poor horse of yours is snoring in the barn, you can be sure.
He's not mine, she says, though she supposes that he is now.
I stole him from Queen Catherine.
Hmm, says Willa, who has crept up behind her very quietly for someone using a cane.
What in the world is happening with this ascension year?
She sets down bundles of goldenrod and yarrow beside Kara, as she grinds oils and herbs with a mortar and pestle.
It is a good thing she came when she did.
These are all in bloom.
We have more, Kara says, jarred and hanging dried in the storeroom.
Fresh is better, Willa says, and taps her on the chin.
Jules watches silently as the two women talk. There is an easy fondness between them that is strange to see. Jules is glad that Kara has not been lonely. She is glad to see her smile, but it is not how she imagined her over the last 5 years.
Do you know nothing about the Ascension, then? Jules asks. Don't you get any news?
Worcester brings us supplies every month, says Willa, in his little cart, pulled by his good shaggy pony. Sometimes he brings us news.
And sometimes he comes twice, says Kara, when Willa is looking particularly fetching. She chuckles, and Willa makes a face.
What is that? Jules asks.
She points to the mortar and pestle.
An ointment for Arsinoe.
And make it thicker than you did the last time.
Willa stretches her back.
I am going to get some sleep before the queen wakes. If she wakes. She lost a lot of blood, and she is weak. It was a very long ride for you, I gather.
Jules went as fast as she could. Maybe she should have gone somewhere else, somewhere closer. Willa walks past and grasps her shoulder firmly.
Do not worry too much. She was always the toughest of them, even when she was a girl.
You remember her, then?
Of course I do. I remember all of them. Until they were six, they were mine.
And then she leaves, and Jules and Kara are alone. Kara studies Jules, her head cocked as she separates leaves from flowers and drops them into the bowl of the mortar.
You have grown up so well, Jules. So pretty.
I have barely grown up at all, Jules mumbles. I'm shorter than everyone at home.
Tiny, Kara says, but fierce.
Camden's ears flicker back and forth as if to agree. Camden is always taking compliments better than she has.
I knew you were strong when you were a girl,
but I never imagined a mountain cat. She looks down.
How are Mom and Dad?
They're fine. They miss you. Jules holds her hand out to the hound, who comes to rest her chin on Jules's knee.
They miss you too, Juniper, she says.
And the dog pants happily. Jake especially.
And how is Madrigal?
Jules hesitates. How to tell Kara about Madrigal and Matthew? About their baby? And should she tell her, when it is not her place, and when it will make no difference, with Kara banished to the cottage?
Madrigal is Madrigal. I've long since stopped waiting for her to be anything different.
That's probably wise, says Kara. But she does love you, Jules.
She always has.
Not like you did, Jules wants to say. I never thought I'd see you again, Aunt Kara. Kara grinds harder on the mixture of ointment. Her time at the cottage has put more muscles on her arms and more thickness to her waist. Her brown gold hair is long and unstyled. She is still beautiful. Jules has always thought Kara was just as beautiful as Madrigal, only in a different way.
They're bound to let me out of here someday, Kara says, and replace me with some good priestess.
Someone like Willa. Not long after the new queen is crowned, I should think.
Why would they do that?
Because this punishment was an Aaron grudge against the Malones. And the next queen won't be an Aaron queen.
Willa seems certain of it, and having raised the young girl, she must know.
She must, says Jules darkly.
Though maybe she's not so certain now.
The Western Sea. The journey from Wolf Spring to Roland by sea is fast. Faster than traveling by wagon by several days. That morning, Mirabella watched priestesses release birds from the deck, back to Roland, to announce the return of the queen.
She wonders whether word of Arsinoe's death will beat them there, whether she will return to candles in the windows and her people dressed for mourning in crimson and black.